I'm Doug Winnell, a pastor with the Living Church of God. We are continuing with our Bible study of 2 Peter. 2 Peter is a book written by the Apostle Peter to churches in Northern Asia Minor, but also they have lessons for us. Peter's writing to people who are being persecuted. They're having to deal with false doctrines and false ideas that were being brought into the early church. Peter is writing approximately in the mid-60s, 60 A.D., there were Jewish people trying to push Jewish ideas in the church. There were Gnostic teachers around the various parts of the Roman Empire, especially in Antioch and Syria, pushing Gnostic ideas, which was a crazy mixture of pagan ideas and satanic ideas for the most part. And also people were developing who wanted to be their own teachers. And Peter's warning about those things, and he's giving these churches instructions how to recognize and how to deal with false prophets and false teachers. In the previous study in chapter 1, Peter mentions that the church of God, the church that he is part of, has a more sure word of prophecy. He also mentions that no prophecy is of any private interpretation. We can't just make up our own interpretations of scriptures, really for the church. You can read that in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15. That it's the church's responsibility to be the pillar and the ground of truth, to hold on to what's right and true. But this discussion of false teachers and prophecy being of no private interpretation is a lead-in at the end of chapter 1 to what Peter then discusses in chapter 2. He talks about false prophets. He says, but as there are also false prophets among people today in Peter's time, he says, there will also be false teachers among you. Now, Paul mentions that the scriptures are written for our admonition, for those of us that live at the end of the age. So these lessons are really meant for us today also, that there will be false teachers as we approach the end of the age. And he says, these false teachers will secretly, subtly bring in destructive heresies. We've talked in previous Bible studies about how Christmas and Easter got into the Christian church, that the pagan peoples in the Roman Empire were keeping Christmas, actually celebrating a very lewd festival towards the end of the year, towards the winter solstice, that included drunkenness and revelry and so on. But they were honoring the rebirth of the sun. In an attempt to convert these pagan people to Christianity, they were told eventually that you can actually worship the Son of God instead of the sun that's coming up. So all kinds of reasons were used to bring destructive heresies and pagan practices into the church of Jesus Christ. It actually corrupted that church. But Peter is saying people who are false teachers will secretly or subtly, they'll have an agenda, and they will work false teachings into the church, even denying the Lord who brought them. It's amazing today. Many people are looking for the return of Jesus Christ, and yet some people are being told, he just comes to your heart. He doesn't really come to this earth. And all kinds of things are being told. Some people say, well, Jesus Christ may come back tonight. He may come back in 100 years. He might come back in 1,000 years. Maybe he's not really coming back at all. It's just a metaphor. But these destructive heresies have spread through the church over the centuries. But Peter says they will bring in secretly these destructive heresies, denying the Lord who brought them, and will bring on themselves swift destruction. But then Peter goes on. In verse 2, he says, many will follow their destructive ways. Peter's implication is these false ideas are going to be popular. That's going to be the easy way to go. And he says, many people will follow those destructive ways. He's only repeating what Jesus Christ warned about in Matthew 24, where he said, in the last days, many will come in my name, and they'll deceive many. So Peter is referring really to the instructions he got from Jesus Christ. Many will follow their destructive ways because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. You know, it's incredible today. The people that keep the Sabbath or keep the holy days are called Jewish. And yet Jesus kept the Sabbath. The apostles kept the holy days. The early church believed that Jesus Christ was going to return to this earth to reign on this earth. Jesus Christ didn't preach about going to heaven. The apostles in the early church never believed they were going to go to heaven. But people that believe these things are blasphemed today. As I mentioned in a previous study, anyone that believes today that it's wrong to participate in abortion or have an abortion, they're claimed to be Christian extremists today. In other words, if you're against murdering an unborn child, you're an extremist. This is what's happening in our society today. Because of false ideas and false teachings, the way of truth will be blasphemed and ridiculed. It says again, talking about false teachers, by covetousness, they will exploit you. They will take advantage of you. They will deceive you with deceptive words. For a long time, their judgment has not been idle. Agendas to divert Christianity from biblical teachings have been around and active since the first century. There are major churches today that are just waiting for their opportunity to pull people away from biblical teachings and get them back to traditions instead of biblical teachings. It says, by covetousness, they will exploit you with deceptive words. For a long time, their judgment has not been idle. They've been watching for their opportunities. They think in centuries, and they take advantage of the time to move, and their destruction does not slumber. Talking about the doom of these false teachers, Peter's saying, don't worry, there's a judgment coming. And he gives several examples of how judgments in the past God has rendered on evildoers. It says, for if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down into hell, the word here is actually a place of restraint. The term is Tartaru, and refers to a place of restraint. You can read more about this in Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, talking about the sin of and rebellion of Satan, as it mentions in Revelation 12, verse 4, that a third of the angels followed Satan in that rebellion. It said, if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down into a place of restraint and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, their judgment is coming. Paul mentions in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 3, that the saints will judge angels. It appears it's going to be part of the responsibility of saints ruling with Jesus Christ to actually determine the fate of some of these rebellious angels. But God is going to judge those evil angels, and says that God did not spare the ancient world. That is, in Noah's time, but he saved Noah, one of eight people, a preacher of righteousness. Righteousness is preaching the commandments of God. And he brought a flood on the world and removed the ungodly people. That was the second judgment. The third place where God has already judged in the world. It says, turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. This is places that were rampant with homosexuality, rampant with all kinds of lusts and evils. Is that he destroyed those cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. We've had a man who was refused to be on the Supreme Court of the United States because he was labeled a Christian extremist, not necessarily a Christian extremist, but an extremist, because he believed in biblical principles. He wrote a book entitled Slouching Towards Gomorrah, talking about our society today. And when you read to the end of the book, he said, Gomorrah is our probable destination. We will probably not change in time. The lesson from the Bible is, Peter says, God judged Sodom and Gomorrah and destroyed them. And as we will see probably in other Bible studies, there's punishments that's going to come on the United States and other nations around the world who profess to be Christian peoples, but don't live by those teachings. God condemned Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live in an ungodly way. But it says he delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed. Lot was living in Sodom. He was a nephew of Abraham. He delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed with the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them, people living in Sodom and Gomorrah, tormented his righteous soul, his mind. He was troubled daily by what he saw, seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptation. He delivered Lot. He got Lot out of there, and he will deliver us too. And he's going to deliver those that are righteous out of a sinful world, especially those who walk according to the flesh. They're the ones that are going to be punished in the lust of uncleanness and despise authority. Now here Peter begins to identify for the benefit of the church members how you identify false teachers. Number one, you identify them by what they teach. You compare it with the Bible. But he also says they will despise authority or despise government. They despise godly authority or constituted authority. They want to be in charge themselves. They want to make their own decisions. They don't want anybody making decisions that will impact them. It says these false teachers will be presumptuous. They presume they know how to explain the Bible. They presume they know how to run things. They're self-willed. They want to do things their way. Now, this is part and parcel of the way our society believes today. We believe that we have to be our own person. We have to make our own decisions. We don't let anybody else tell us what to do. And yet, if we're going to be a Christian, we've got to let God tell us what to do. But they're presumptuous, self-willed. They are not afraid to speak evil of dignitaries. They're not afraid to speak evil of God. They're not afraid to speak evil of the Bible. They're not afraid to speak evil of those in authority. Whereas angels, who are greater in power and might, do not bring a reviling accusation against them before the Lord. It says angels don't even put other people down. Again, talking about the impact of these false teachers, but these, like natural brute beasts, are made to be caught up and destroyed. In other words, some people act like animals. They're not restrained by any laws. They're not restrained by any conscience. In fact, some people have described the generations growing up in America today as a generation of barbarians. They don't recognize authority in the home. They don't recognize authority held by civil authorities, and as a result, our nations are coming apart. They speak evil of things they do not understand. Many people laugh at Christians for opposing abortion, for opposing homosexuality, for opposing all kinds of evils. They laugh at that, but they don't realize that we're taking the lives of over 1.5 million little unborn babies a year in America. How many people died in the Holocaust? 5 or 6 million. But we've been doing this for almost 30 years. 30 million babies are being killed. The people speak evil of what they don't understand. They speak evil of people that are trying to live by the laws of God. They're going to receive the wages of unrighteousness, Peter says, as those who count it a pleasure to carouse in the daytime. He says, there are spots and blemishes on your feasts. Christians will be keeping the feasts of God, the holy days. But there will be people there at those holy days in many cases, having a ball, having fun, but not paying attention to what's being preached, not really wanting to live the way of life that's being talked about. Having eyes full of adultery, that's our society today. And we've got to guide our eyes and guide our minds. That cannot cease from sin, these false teachers, it says, will beguile unstable souls. They will mislead people who do not have a firm foundation. Again, Peter has talked about over and over, and as we will see towards the end of the chapter, the importance of knowledge, the importance of proving things, the importance of remembering what is right and what is true. If we do that, we're not going to be unstable. We're not going to be deceived easily. He said they have a heart, these evil teachers, who are trained in covetousness. They're trained in covetousness. They're exercised in evil things. They've forsaken the right way and gone astray, following the way of Balaam. You might want to do your own little Bible study on Balaam. He was a false teacher talked about in Numbers chapter 22 through 25. He was apparently a diviner, a predictor of the future. in the ancient Near East. He held a position in the pagan world similar to Moses among the Israelites, but he was into predicting the future for a wage. It's a very interesting story you might want to read through on your own, but it says he loved the wages of unrighteousness. He liked to predict the future for everybody, for whoever would pay him to predict whatever future they wanted. He loved the wages of unrighteousness, but he was rebuked for his iniquity. A dumb donkey speaking with a man's voice. God enabled a donkey to speak. It's interesting that Balaam, as a diviner, made his predictions by cutting up an animal and looking at the insides. God had an animal tell Balaam, there's an angel up in front of you and you couldn't even see it, but you're supposed to be able to predict the future. Very interesting story. But Balaam also deceived the Israelites. He got them involved with pagan idolatry and pagan immorality and deceived the whole nation. So Peter is talking about a biblical character who once earlier deceived the Israelites, and he's saying, be careful, those of you in the church, those of you who've been called to believe the truth, that you don't get caught up in sexual and immoral idolatry by false teachers. Concluding then, the last couple of verses in chapter 2, for when they speak great swelling words of emptiness. Have you ever heard a person getting into philosophy, especially their own philosophy? Great words of emptiness. A lot of hot air is what Peter is saying. They allure through the lusts of the flesh. This will feel good. This will taste good. This looks reasonable, just like Satan did to Eve. They appeal through the lusts of the flesh, through licentiousness, again, the sexuality, the evil aspects of it. The ones who have actually escaped from those who live in error. While they promise you liberty, you'll be free, you'll have fun, you'll enjoy life. While they promise you liberty, they will make you slaves of corruption. Slaves of corruption. They'll teach you fables. For by whom a person is overcome, by him also he's brought into bondage. For if after they, now he's talking here about people who have been called out of this, if they go back into it, if they who have escaped the pollutions of the world through the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ and our Savior, if they're again entangled, if they get back involved with these things and overcome, their latter end is worse than the beginning. Unfortunately, some people slip back. Their minds have been open to understand the truth. They let go of it, and they slip back into these pagan ideas, these fables that are being fostered. It would have been better, Peter says, for them if they had not known the way of righteousness than to have known it and turn away from the holy commandment, to turn away from the authoritative preaching and teaching of the truth. But it has happened to them according to the true proverb. There is a proverb that says a dog returns to its own vomit, and a sow, having washed herself, getting all clean, goes back and wallows in the mire. What Peter is talking about is people understanding the truth, then going back to the pagan ideas that they once came out of. He talks about one of the trials that you're going to have to deal with, the people that he's writing to in the first century. And also he's writing to us, one of the trials we're going to have to deal with at the end of the age that Jesus Christ talked about was false teachers. We're going to have to learn to recognize them, to understand how they operate, so that we can avoid being deceived. We'll continue with one more chapter in 2 Peter with our next segment. I'm Doug Winnell with the Living Church of God.